So be going in your Bible to the 73rd Psalm. We'll begin there this morning. And while you're going there, I guess you and I have some explaining to do.
Just a little.
So if you're a guest this morning and thinking, wow, that's not what it looks like back home when Argus guys get up to preach, trust me, on Sunday morning, it isn't what this usually looks like here either. So this weekend is the weekend we devote to studying with our teenagers. That's what we've been doing Friday night and yesterday afternoon. And that always comes over into the lessons on Sunday. And so you may not be aware that actually Jeff and I have been doing sort of a tandem effort with young people. What, about 5 years now?
Yeah, for a while.
Going around talking about authentic faith with teenagers. Done that for several churches. And to help us sort of to work our strengths, we typically have done this together, including the Sunday morning sermon, which kind of freaks some churches out because it's kind of different. But
so far, so good.
So far, so good. Yes, nobody's died as a result of this effort. So actually, we planned this 2 years ago.
Before COVID.
And before I was even a preacher here.
Ironically.
Oddly enough. And so don't think this is some kind of a coming change to the Sunday morning routine.
No.
The Sunday night crowd knows we do this all the time. And if this little venue will encourage you to come back for the Sunday night sessions, maybe that would be a good thing to come out of all of this. So just a word or two about what we've been doing with the kids this weekend. About a month ago, I guess, maybe a little more than that, we sat down during a Devo and we asked the kids to share the questions that they had. In fact, I think we let them write them anonymously.
Yeah, it was note cards. I think we did get some note cards.
And tell us what questions you're struggling with. And so we collected those questions, kind of categorized them into a collection of 10 topics. And over the course of this weekend, we've been working through those for two reasons, really. Most obviously, we want our kids to have an answer to their questions, right? But secondly, sort of an underlying purpose to that was to emphasize that church family is a safe setting for talking about questions. Maybe some of us who are older think, duh, isn't that obvious?
Not to young people.
I don't always know that it is obvious to our kids.
Right.
And so what happens is questions linger and fester and they get unresolved, unsettled, and they wind up undermining faith. And so one of the messages we're hoping to send to our young people, not only today, but all the time, is that in this church family, it is okay for you to ask questions, even very basic questions. You're not sure that God exists. You've got some doubts about that. This is a place where it's okay to talk about that, put that on the table, and we can work to answer it. We want our kids to do that, folks, because we want their faith to be rock solid. I wanted to work that this morning because I especially want to say that for moms and dads, that's especially important. We can do a little bit at teen weekend and in Bible class and in sermons, but really at home is where we hope the questions are going to surface. You guys spend a whole lot more time together than we do, and you can encourage your kids to talk about their questions and to pass that on to us. We need to preach and teach about it. We want to do that.
And I think as moms and dads, what we need to remind ourselves is our children's questions don't go away if they're not answered at home or not answered here. Their questions don't go away. They just go somewhere else for the answers. They ask their friends at school, or even worse, they get on the internet and they Google it, and YouTube is where they will find answers to these questions. And that is not what we want to have happen. We want, as parents, the elders of this church, the preachers of this church, and members of the church, we want our young people to know that this is a place where we talk about this. We do not want our young people taking their questions somewhere else where they feel safe. It's safe to talk about. This is the safe place to bring up anything about God, man, eternal destiny, the Bible, anything. And the young people, what we like to remind you sometimes is, trust us, David, I, the elders, even your parents. It may be a new question to you. We've heard it all before. And so this really is something you can talk and bring, and we'll be happy to think this through and study this out with you.
So we've got two this morning.
Yep.
Two this morning, four tonight. Maybe I shouldn't have said that. That might be discouraging to come back. But we have more time tonight. So Two this morning that are related. The four tonight, yeah, they're not related at all. So tonight's just going to be a spiritual buffet of four really, really different questions. But buffets are okay sometimes, right? Skip the broccoli, get the other stuff. But the two this morning are sort of related to each other. You know, I'm gonna take this clicker and I'm gonna fling it somewhere because I am pushing the button. Nothing's happening, guys. Thank you. Go ahead and pop that first one up too. There it is. So one of the questions we got from the kids was, is it wrong to question God? And so probably we need to give a little context to that question. I actually talked to this young person about this question to dig deeper into what was really behind it. So if I could give you an example, almost exactly 10 years ago, it was in May of 2011, that one of my very good friends and fellow elders over at Dallin Road, where I used to preach, died of cancer. For a decade, he had battled metastatic prostate cancer. And listen, this wasn't just another guy in the church. This guy was terrific. Great elder, had an extremely inspiring influence on the rest of our leadership team, on our whole congregation. Listen, he was vital to us. And so as a church family, we just prayed and prayed and prayed that God would heal him, feeling like if there was ever going to be a time where God should intervene and heal somebody, this is the guy.
Right.
We need him. He's important to us. And on Mother's Day in May of 2011, he died. And so all of us who had labored with him in prayer were left with our questions for God. So why did he die? And why didn't God heal him as God had healed others? You know, sometimes very wicked people live really long lives. And here's this good man whose life is cut short by this terrible disease. And so I talked to this young person about their question. That's really where it was headed. When things happen, and we just don't get it, and we just don't understand, is it okay to sort of question, why did God do this? Or can we push that a little further? Is it okay to be disappointed with God? Or maybe to be mad at God, angry with God. Why didn't you act here? Why didn't you do this? And so that was really, I think, the question they were struggling with. And so I thought about Psalm 73.
Right.
That's going to be familiar to this crowd, right? If you're the Sunday night crowd, you know that it hadn't been that far back that we went through Psalm 73. But remember, our teenagers didn't. So if you were here on Sunday night, you're getting a little review. Some of our young people, this may be kind of new. We're going to Psalm 73 because
the psalmist basically walks this path. This is his own struggle. And here you have literally in this text of Scripture itself a model of somebody who admits that the fact that the wicked seem to thrive and prosper and thus get away with it, while the righteous often suffer and even die young. And he admits this nearly rotted his faith away from the inside out. And this psalm is his confession of, I've been there, I know this, and here's how I got past it.
In fact, let's just read the first three verses because it really kind of gives us a synopsis of his struggle. He said, surely God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. We all know that, right? God is a good God. God is a loving God. But as for me, my feet came close to stumbling. My steps had almost slipped, for I was envious of the arrogant, as I saw the prosperity of the wicked. And then he goes on to develop that idea. But just a couple of things to pick up on there. Verse 1, he knows God is good, but he said it doesn't always look that way.
In other words, he knows the right thing to say.
Right.
He's a good church-going person. He knows what the Bible says about this, but life doesn't look that way.
Not always.
No.
And because life didn't line up with what he knew or what he thought he knew to be true, he says in verse 2, this nearly tripped me up.
And let's say a word about that real quick, especially to the young people who were with us Friday night. Remember, Friday night, one of our questions that we dealt with was, how do we know there's a God, right? And we dealt with that more on the intellectual level. That was, you know, give your best argument, you know, for why there's a God and how we can believe and be certain there's a God. And that was mostly dealt with on the intellectual level. I mean, we talked about the issues that, you know, science supposedly raises, what have you. And we dealt with that on an intellectual, mental level. But the reality is, for most people, where the issue of whether or not there's a God really becomes profound to them and powerful to them is when life is not fair and God seems distant or absent or unresponsive. The problem of unjust suffering or bad things happening to good people, or even more personally, I lived my life for God and I'm still cancer, lost job, failed marriage, whatever it is. That's where the real test becomes, because you actually cast all your cares on God and it doesn't seem like he was there. This issue actually is much more likely to create atheism in people in this room than any intellectual argument that the world throws at us. And so let's, again, moms and dads, as we're talking to our kids, raising our kids, understand that this is where people like us wind up as atheists if we don't figure out how to deal with the trouble of life in a redemptive way.
It is the most compelling argument against faith.
Experience itself.
Yeah, not because it's logically sound, it isn't.
It's emotionally
but
sound.
But it is. I remember, I've been surveying for a couple of years now, young people that walk away from the Lord.
Right.
And I've talked to the ones who've come back to ask them about their journey. I remember one young lady writing to me and saying, I was really close to my band director. Mm. And evidently, just at key moments in this life, he had been a go-to person for her.
Right.
And he got cancer and died.
Right.
And she said, I couldn't figure out why God would let that happen.
Right.
When he knew how much I needed him. And she lost her faith. It literally undermined her faith for a time. I hope what you'll see in Psalm 73, it's not a new struggle.
Right.
And there are other places. I like Habakkuk 1 too. How long, O Lord, will I call for help and you not hear? Can you relate to that?
Right.
I cry out to you violence, and yet you do not save. And did you pair that up with Psalm 46 and verse 1, which is one of my favorite psalms? I don't like Psalm 73 very much. It's a hard psalm. But Psalm 46 verse 1 says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble.
Right.
And so how do you square Psalm 73 with Psalm 46? That's where life is, isn't it? I know who God is. I know what he promises to do, but it just doesn't seem like he does.
Right.
So what this young person wanted to know, what they're really pressing here is it okay to feel that way? Is it okay to feel that disappointment? And so to answer the specific question, I don't know that it's avoidable, is
it? Not if we are, I think, seriously living a life of faith before God in which we are truly being honest with him. I don't know if you've ever thought about this or not. When we did Psalm 73, I think I mentioned this, so some of the room, but we've got a lot of folks visiting with us today, a lot of young people who weren't in the room. Understand this. You know, we like Psalm 46 or Psalm 23. The fact of the matter, though, is two-thirds of the psalms in the book are lament psalms. Now stop and think about that. What's a lament psalm? That's a psalm where the psalmist is crying out to God because it hurts, because something has happened in life, sickness. Somebody has grievously sinned against them and gotten away with it, and it's wrecked their life. And in all of this, it seems like God is distant. God didn't protect them. God didn't save them. And they're crying out to God, literally one line in one psalm, how long, O Lord, are you going to let this go on? But you know what's amazing? It's not just that the psalmists literally show us by inspiration that this is how people of faith sometimes talk to God. But you see it in the prophets too. I tell you, there was a bold prophet in Jeremiah, a courageous man who literally risks his life repeatedly to go into things like the temple compound itself and say, everything about what you're doing here is wrong, and get the king, the priesthood, all the nobles furious with him and wanting to kill him. And he courageously does that. But you know what he does in his private moments? You go back to Jeremiah chapter 1. He actually, when he was first called to be a prophet, tells God, don't want the job. Don't want the job. God pulls a Moses on him. You're going to do the job anyways. You get to Jeremiah chapter 20. There's several other places, but to me, Jeremiah 20 is one of the most profound places in this. You mentioned Psalm 73. Jeremiah 20 is astounding. in his private moments. You know what Jeremiah says to God? If you've never read this before, go back and read this afternoon. I'm going to read just a little bit of it now, but the whole chapter is profound. Jeremiah 20, beginning of verse 7. O Lord, you have deceived me, and I was deceived. God, you pushed me in a situation. You knew I was going to get hung up and torn to pieces being a prophet and be rejected by everybody, even my own family. You deceived me into this job. You are stronger than I, and so you prevailed. You forced me to do it. I've become a laughing stock all day. Everybody mocks me. Whenever I speak and cry out, I shout violence and destruction. In other words, I did what you asked me to do and said what you told me to say. For the word of the Lord has become for me a reproach and a derision all day long. And if I say, I won't mention him, I won't speak anymore to his name. You know what? I quit. No more being a prophet. I will not speak in the name of God anymore. I've had it with this. Well, then there's in my heart, as it were, a fire shut up in my bones, burning. I'm weary of holding it. I can't stop. I hear many whispering, terrors on every side. Denounce them. Let's denounce them, say all his close friends, watching for my fall. Perhaps he will be deceived, and then we can overcome him and take our revenge on him. And so Jeremiah is frustrated, and he's almost telling God off. You deceived me, he accuses God of. But then he pulls another Psalm 73 moment. And then it says, but the Lord is with me, like a dread warrior. He knows everybody's out to get him. He knows they're whispering and plotting his downfall, just like Jesus will have several centuries later. And that even that, he knows God is with me. And so the issue, David, I think, is that we have to learn to strengthen our faith to see not if, but how God is still with us. Even when on the surface, emotionally, I'm sitting there saying, God fooled me. God took advantage of me. God said, I'll be with you. And you know what? Sure doesn't look like he's with me. That's actually the moment when we absolutely wrestle with God. And by the way, part of what lamenting is, a part of what Jeremiah was doing here is, it's an act of confession and therefore righteousness. Because you know what you're really doing? You're admitting to God what's in your heart and he already knows anyways. Think about that.
That's a great point.
You are confessing to God what he already knows. And what you're really saying is, listen, young people, whoever asked this, it's all in how you do it. It's all in how you do it. Because you're doing it to get it off your chest, to acknowledge to God, and then basically say to God, show me how to get through this despite what's happened. Deepen my faith so that I actually see how what you've said is still true, despite what's going on in my life. Does that make sense?
I think that's a great point, that even if we choose not to acknowledge that I'm feeling angry
right.
with God.
It's still there.
I am and he knows.
That's
who
right.
are we hiding
that's
this
right.
from? And so maybe the thing to say about that is that's what these are. These are emotions.
Yes.
Sometimes how we feel is not even subject to our control.
Yeah.
But then what do we do about how we feel? I think the key thing, I go back to Psalm 73 and remember that he went into the house of the Lord, right?
Yes.
And he saw some things. So the more important thing, I think, is not do I pass through these seasons where this doesn't seem to line up with what I know and believe about God. The question is, what do I do when I feel that way?
Right.
When I'm disappointed or frustrated or angry, what do I do with those feelings? And I like what the psalmist does.
Right.
He said, I went into your house, I saw some things, I understood some things that helped me process all of this better.
In other words, I kept doing what I know I should do, not what I feel like doing. And I'll tell you, especially young people raised in a generation where you're told your emotions are the real you. You've got to be authentic and true to yourself, which means being true to how you feel. Emotions are a barometer. They tell you how you feel, but they don't tell you how you should feel. And that's part of where, you know, even with toddlers, right? You know, a toddler throws a temper tantrum when they are told no. But what are we doing as parents? We're teaching them how to learn to deal with those emotions and do what's right anyways. And by the way, you can learn over time to change how you feel about some things. You can outgrow immature emotions and mature them. Your emotions are not the real you. They're just a barometer that reflects the circumstances and how you're processing them. You can retrain and retool your emotions to a certain extent, but always, 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 part of what it means to be a human being and have free will is we can choose to do what our mind knows is right and with our will choose to overrule how we feel and do what we know is true anyways. You go to the temple anyways and you keep on worshiping.
That's exactly right. All right, we got to press on to the next question because it's 10:30.
Oh, wow.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, we're on the clock this morning. It's not like with the kids on the weekend where you just keep going. I'm going to push the button and see what happens. Nothing. Oh, there goes. Awesome. I know you're going to be stunned to see this question, right? Can I know if the bad things happening to me are from God? Pay attention to the question that our kids are asking. These come from our kids. These are things that are on their heart. And think about what's generating questions like these, and think about how it's important that they have good answers to these questions. So with this question, we actually tap into what Philip Yancey called the question that never goes away, right?
Because now it's personal.
Well, and it's that question about suffering,
yeah,
right? And even that propensity in the way this one is worded to assume that somehow if I'm suffering, this is from God. God is sending this or allowing this,
right,
and must have some reason for it. I remember years ago, I was talking to a lady who was a brand new Christian. And after obeying the gospel, she just went through one serious problem after another. You've had a season like that where just somebody, there's this thing I had to fix, and then this problem came up. She had health issues and financial issues. All this trouble came into her life. After about a year of that, she came to me after church. She grabbed me and pulled me aside and said, I just want to know, why is God punishing me? That's how she felt about it. Mm. All this misery and suffering in my life must surely be some kind of indication from God that I have not pleased him in some way, and I need to figure out what that is. Of course, you realize we're opening a can of worms at 10:32 on Sunday morning when we bring up the subject of suffering. And I guess maybe we need to be upfront about that. That suffering, brothers and sisters, is a complicated problem. It cannot be easily worked out with two or three cleverly crafted slogans. You got to think deeply about this, and you got to work on this, because the truth is, suffering can have a lot of causes.
Yep.
And not all of those causes are necessarily corrected to God or to my behavior.
No, that's right. And I think part of what, David, what really drives us about this issue, and I want you to stop and think about this. The reason we wrestle with this issue so hard, and young people, hear me carefully about this, is because we want to make sense of our suffering. Because if I can make sense of my suffering, if I can explain the source, number one, I may be able to make it go away on my terms and my time frame. If I can make sense of it, I can control it. And folks, that gets us in all sorts of bad places. As a quick aside, Book of Job, Job's three friends show up, right? And in the name of comforting him, they try to prove to Job that he must have sinned a really, really great sin to bring all these personal calamities upon him. The problem is, you and I as readers of the book know that's not true. But Job's friends spoke and said a lot of untrue, ignorant, ungodly things to that poor suffering man in the name of trying to explain his suffering. Because you know what? And we got to be careful when we do this too, when we're trying to help others who are suffering and make sense of their suffering. You wind up saying untrue things because you know what? I want to make sense of this too, because if I can explain why and how this happened, I can prevent it from happening to me. The terrifying thing about suffering is, we'll give reasons why we may be the source of it, or God may be the source of it, but there's a lot more reasons why it may have nothing to do with either me or God.
Well, so two things about that.
Yeah.
The first thing is, people often miss it.
Absolutely.
The great lesson to carry away from Job's three friends is they didn't know the reason.
Right.
And, you know, read all those chapters in the middle. Oh, man.
30-something chapters.
It's oppressive. It's like reading Leviticus.
But if they can show how he's wrong, they can sleep in peace.
On and on and on.
Yep.
And it's utterly, in fact, be careful when you start quoting from Job, because you may be quoting a speech that's wrong.
That's right.
And so, number one, they miss it. And then number two, when you jump at this into this from a biblical perspective, you start looking at suffering in the Bible, what you find out is that suffering happens for lots of reasons. Have you pondered that?
Yep.
So if you just kind of go through and survey, let's do that real quick.
Yep, absolutely.
Some examples of why people suffer in the Bible. Are there times where people suffered because they were being punished by God? Did that happen? Absolutely happened. First case that I thought of was the unfaithful nation who comes out of Egypt.
Right.
Israel goes up to the border of the promised land, refuses to go in. And what happened as a consequence of that? Y'all remember? They're condemned to wander and suffer in the wilderness for 40 years till the faithless generation dies. So there's an example of suffering that is punishment from God because of their bad behavior.
Right. Ananias and Sapphira, New Testament. They're around.
Though the suffering was brief there.
I'm pretty sure it's going on still.
Well, that is a good point. I can't argue with you on that, Jeff. Sometimes it is a punishment from God.
Absolutely.
Sometimes, though, and I think we have to, this sort of nuancing the problem a little bit. I think sometimes suffering isn't necessarily from God as much as it's just a consequence of being dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, God built the world to work a certain way. You don't respect gravity, you're going to be in the ER.
Well, I thought about Proverbs 23, that great text on drinking too much wine.
Right.
Remember how that begins in Proverbs 23, verse 29? Who has woe, sorrow, contentions, complaining, wounds, redness of eyes. Sounds like a lot of suffering, right? Where does it come from? People who linger long over wine and those who go to taste unmixed wine. So, if you went out and drank too much last night and you have a hangover this morning, you're suffering. Now, I don't think that's a punishment from God. No. I don't think that God sent that plague on you in the middle of the night. I think that's just a consequence of being dumb.
Right.
You go out and you behave badly, and there are consequences that follow. Sometimes consequences are a whole lot worse than just a hangover.
Absolutely.
So sometimes it isn't about God. It's just about our bad behavior. And then sometimes it's about the behavior of other people. Sometimes we suffer because other people are behaving badly.
Right.
And I thought about Naboth. Mm-hmm. Y'all remember that story? Wicked King Ahab wanted Naboth's vineyard?
Vineyard. And Naboth said no.
And so, for a good reason.
Not for sale, it's my inheritance.
And so Ahab and his wife just plot against this poor guy. He suffers terribly, ultimately dies. Why is Naboth suffering? It isn't because he's a bad guy. He's a good guy. It's because someone else is behaving.
Right.
Badly.
Someone,
by the way,
else sinned.
Talk about the can of worms. This all gets into this business of free will. God's going to let us choose a path. I mean, some people are going to choose a bad path, and sometimes their bad path collides with me and causes me trouble and suffering. And we see that biblically.
Right.
Now, another wrinkle to that is sometimes we suffer with the wicked.
We're part of a sinful group under judgment, and so we get sucked away.
Which takes me back to Numbers 14.
Yeah.
So remember in Numbers 14, everybody over the age of 20 died in the wilderness as the faithless generation, right? So imagine you were 19. The good news is you made the cut. You are not going to die in the wilderness. The bad news is you're going to be 59 before you get to go, which is older than me, by the way.
Not by much.
So remember who the elder is in this relationship. So the poor guy who's 19 has to suffer for a long time in the wilderness and not for his sin, for the sin of his parents.
And Joshua and Caleb would be in that list. Moses would be in that list. I think about later in the Bible, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you know, guys who are righteous men. You realize nothing bad said about Daniel in the whole Bible. How rare does that happen? You have good people in the Bible, and yet he spends his entire life in captivity.
And so the reason I think that one is especially important is because there may come a day, brothers and sisters, where God tires of the wickedness of this nation, and he brings judgment, because God judges nations in time. And it may well be that there is a lot of suffering that takes place in this land that you and I may participate in, or our grandchildren may participate in. It doesn't mean that they've done anything wrong. Sometimes the righteous suffer with the wicked who are being judged. And then, why don't we talk about Job? It's hard to pass by Job.
Yeah.
Because Job suffered from an assault of the devil.
Right, a poster child for this issue. Yeah. And that's exactly right. We forget, you know, Paul, Ephesians chapter 6, when Paul, you know, that famous passage that we teach our kids about the armor of the Lord. But in the whole context of it, the reason you put the armor of the Lord on is because our struggle is not with flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers of darkness and the heavenlies. And so spiritual, you know, Satan is real, folks. Satan is real. And God allows Satan to work in the world still through temptation, but through other things. I think about Paul in 2 Corinthians, when you remember that famous thorn in the flesh that Paul says he has, but he doesn't say it's from God. You know what he says? He says it's from Satan. Devil. Paul understood that Satan was working through circumstances in his life that were causing him some suffering. Now, we prayed to God for it to be removed, but God said no, because God wanted to learn Paul to learn greater dependence upon God and through suffering. But the point is, Paul understood this wasn't from God. This was a messenger from Satan.
But isn't it bizarre that we never say that? I mean, think about it. When is the last time you've heard someone say, man, I am really suffering in my life. I've got this terrible assault from the devil. I've never heard anyone. I've heard lots of people blame God. Never heard anyone blame Satan.
Isn't that interesting?
That's odd.
Yeah.
And yet we do see that in Scripture, that there were
Old
people
and
who
New
were
Testament. That's
afflicted
right.
by the devil. And then just finally, let's just add this to the list. If we're creating a list of reasons people suffer, sometimes you just suffer as the natural consequence of life.
I think about that line in Ecclesiastes where the preacher trying to make sense of life, if I live wisely, can I control my outcome and never suffer? And this stunning line, time and chance happen to all. And that's the bottom line. Sometimes there is no way of making sense of it. This is simply a fallen world. We forget in Genesis 3, you know, when Adam and Eve sin, removed from the garden, we miss this sometimes. Go back and read Genesis 3 this afternoon before you take your afternoon nap. He didn't curse man. He cursed the serpent. He didn't curse man and woman. He punished them, but he cursed the ground. He broke creation. Now suffering is part of it, but creation itself. And so the irony is, you know, once upon a time, you know, Adam and Eve had dominion over the bears. Now the bears want to eat me. I don't have dominion anymore. They can kill me. And so the creation itself, viruses, bacteria, this is not a friendly world anymore. This is a ground that wants to absorb us back into it. And so sometimes it's just simply creation itself is broken and time and chance happen to all.
Well, it did the natural course of life.
That's right.
I mean, my father-in-law, Heidi's dad, in September will be 95. And if you're 95 and sitting in the crowd, don't be offended about what I'm about to say. But my father-in-law is old, folks. I mean, he is seriously old. And he has lived a good life. I mean, my wife does not get her extremist health views, you know, from nowhere. I mean, that's handed down through our family. They are healthy people. They live a healthy life. And he's 95 years old. But you know what? His body's weak. He's fading. He's suffering. Not because he's been bad or done something wrong. He's been a good man. He's just getting old. It's part of the process. And I really expected everybody with gray hair to give me a hearty amen when I said that, right? It's just part of the journey. We get older.
Right.
We begin to hurt. Ecclesiastes 12 talks about
Absolutely.
That, the pains of life.
We die.
And then we die.
We die. And that's just part of it.
The process. So when you start talking about why people suffer, how long is that list? Go on and on and on. And on. So the question that was asked, and we need to wrap this thing up. Question that was asked is, can I know why I am suffering? Can I know if this is from God or not? And that's important because, as we said, Job's friends got mixed up about that. I think the answer to that question is yes and no. I think sometimes you can know. I mean, if I've been abusing my body with drugs or alcohol or food for decade after decade after decade, and then I begin to have physical ailments that cause suffering, can I look back and say,
my choices did this.
I have some responsibility
right.
in this.
Right.
Yes. You know, folks, if you smoke cigarettes your whole life and you get lung cancer, don't point the finger up in heaven and blame God. That's about some choices that we made. In fact, one of the reasons it's wise to do that and to think about that is if I'm doing something foolish that's causing suffering, I might be able to do something about that. I might be able to change my behavior and take away the suffering. But now the flip side of that is that sometimes we don't know. Jeff and I have talked a lot about Job in our private conversations.
Yeah.
I think we agree on this point. There's no indication Job ever knew.
I think that's one of the most powerful things about that book. I mean, what you really realize then, and this is a good way to start tying this up this morning, is simply this. nothing in the text tells us Job ever knew about that conversation between God and Satan that we all know about, because we get to read Job chapters 1 and 2. And so what the book really reminds us then is the question is really not about man getting an answer from God. In fact, Job kind of wants that. And when God finally shows up in the whirlwind at the end of the book, does Job answer any of God's questions? Correct answer is no. God doesn't tell Job, here's the real story, here's what's going on, thanks for hanging in there for me, you proved the point, I really appreciate that. Instead, he asks Job a bunch of questions that remind Job how little Job can ever even understand, even if God wanted to tell him some of the deeper things about why things are the way they are. What the book of Job actually reminds us, rightly read, is not God owes man an answer. What the book of Job, because this is actually what chapters 1 and 2 tell us, God and Satan have a conversation, and what it boils down to is this: will a man simply do what's right because it's right, even if there's no reward for him in it? Will he simply obey God because God is God? And Satan says, no, we won't. You blessed Job so much, that's the only reason Job follows you. And God says, I think we could take everything away and Job will still be Job and faithful. And guess what? Who was right? God was. Even though Job suffered and wanted to know why, Job refused to, as his wife put it, curse God and die. And so what Job reminds us is, as we tie this around and bring this full circle, is the real question is not, why does God allow this to happen? God says, my ways are above your ways. And even if I tried to explain to you why I've let history and the world play out the way it was, you wouldn't understand it if I told you. The real issue is this: will you and I do what's right anyway, simply because he's God, even if I don't understand? And Satan's wager is, no, we won't. And Job reminds us what we've got to say is, yes, we will.
The word we need to attach to what you just said is the word trust.
Absolutely.
Proverbs 3:5, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not lean in your own understanding.
Absolutely.
In all your ways acknowledge him. He will make your paths straight. So are we willing to trust God, not just when things are good? Are we willing to trust that God is still God and God is still good, even when things are difficult? And that ultimately, in the end, all this is going to work out for the good of his people. And that's where we can wrap this up. Because if you believe that about God, then we desperately need to have a relationship with him. So you guys can transition to the song slide. You know, we usually clue the guys by walking down to the front. I don't guess that's going to happen today. So there we go. Song slides are up, and maybe someone in this crowd has a decision to make. Is it time for you to put your trust in God? Maybe you made a decision to follow him a long time ago and you haven't stuck with that, or maybe you've never made your choice about being a disciple. The question is, are you going to put your trust in him, that through his son he could rescue you from sin and ultimately bring you home to heaven? If you need to make that choice today, more than anything, he wants you to come home, and we want to help you. You need to respond. Come on down to the front right now while we stand, while we sing.